Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks for joining us on Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you today. It's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and it's a pleasure. Thanks for making us a part of your day. We love having you here because we have extraordinary guests that we celebrate who are doing incredible things to make our world a better place. We're continuing our exclusive series with Maureen Centura, extraordinary education advocate, and I'm very excited to have her here. Today we're going to dive into talking about a lot of different things, as we always do, and we always try to make everything topical and relevant for you. But we are approaching that back to school, and I know if there are kids listening, they're like, what? It's still August. Don't say back to school, Mr. Masters. I know when it was August and I heard that too, I would be like, wait, I'm still on amusement park rides and still in the ocean swimming. But back to school is approaching quickly. So in this episode, we're going to explore a lot of different things. But one of the things that I think is very relevant and topical are the back to school essentials. First of all, things like, you know, what's the best time to really start back to school shopping, and how can parents help a child adapt to maybe a new building? You know, there's been so many changes and everything since COVID and the pandemic, different ways that things are being done, different approaches. Sometimes you're in a new building, just a lot of different things. And maybe you have a child that's going to school for the first time and you're a parent and you have a lot of angst because, you know, your child is leaving you and now they're going to school and you're going to be home or at work. And that's separation anxiety. A lot of different things to talk about on this episode and more. Let's welcome live and direct from New York our expert, educational advocate, also co-creator of the extraordinary Christopher Centura Educational Scholarship Fund, which we'll talk about as well, which is a beautiful fund which actually helps students get some of the funding they need to be able to continue their education. And that's something beautiful that Maureen and her husband, Al Centura, created in honoring their son, Christopher. So we'll talk about that as well. But first, not from Ireland, not from Pennsylvania, not from Oahu. She's actually back in New York. Maureen Centura, the world traveler. Maureen, welcome back to Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here, as always.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back, and thank you. I'm happy. You know, there's no place like home, so I love to travel, and I love to be, you know, seeing new sights, but I love to be home as well. So I'm back at home in New York, and, you know, things are the same, which is very nice. You're coming back to consistency, you know, that's something when you mentioned, you know, kids going into a new school, that's part of the anxiety, is that, you know, the consistency that they were familiar with last year may not be in place this year, you know. But I wanted to, you mentioned, about new students and parents sending their children to school for the first time. I'll relate a personal experience. I have many, but this, when my oldest daughter, Jennifer, first went to nursery school, she was excited and a little, you know, I didn't want her to be nervous. I wanted her to know it was a great place to be, and of course it was, and we had visited the school, and the teacher had come to the house and, you know, met her, and so these were all very special kinds of things, you know, that occurred before her going into school. But she went in happily, and I sat outside on a bench, you know, and when she went in and the door closed, I sat and I cried. And I thought, you know, how silly am I crying? But it was that my child was growing up. My child was moving to another stage in her life. And you know, I had another child, a baby, you know, and so I was very busy and all of that. But it was my transition of letting my child go into another phase in her life, which I was delighted and happy to do. I was very, you know, happy to see her emerge and grow, but it was very hard. So for any parent that, you know, sheds a tear or two, you know, when they say goodbye to their child, don't do it in front of your child, because then your child will feel that they're going into a place that's not safe. Do it after they leave, and just, you know, have a quiet moment and just know that this is not abnormal, that it's okay, and you know, the beginnings of a new experience are wonderful for kids. And you know, you set the stage on how wonderful it is. And you know, when kids start school, you know, it's difficult when you say, well, what did you do today? And they always say, well, nothing. You have to be very specific with little kids. You have to say, well, did you paint? Did you play? Did you listen to a story? And then they'll talk to you and tell you all sorts of things. But you can't say, well, how was school today? Because kids will either say, oh, it was boring, or I didn't learn anything. So you have to be the specific one and make sure that, you know, you get as much information as you can. But I know it's very hard for first-time parents. Now, when parents get into junior high school, you say, oh, goodbye, you know, so long, you know, and you sigh your relief. But again, that's another stage. I have grandchildren who are in Texas, and they start school tomorrow. So their school begins in the middle of, you know, the third week of August, and it ends in the end of May. So there are children in the United States who are already beginning school. And for those of us, you know, in New York, school doesn't begin until after Labor Day. So, you know, some children have more time off in the summer than others, but then they go until the end of June, where others start earlier and they end in the end of May. And so for all the kids who are beginning school, I wish you a wonderful year and a happy experience, and hard work is always rewarded, and I want everybody to know that it's always rewarded. And you know, any little anxieties you have, you know, easily, you know, disappeared when you get with friends and you see people that you know. And even if you don't know anybody, there's always somebody who will become your friend if you reach out to them. So that's my message for the new group of students coming in, you know, and for the parents as well. It's a great time, and every year are new challenges and new experiences and new situations, you know, that sometimes you have to deal with, but other times, you know, you applaud and are very proud and happy of your children. Parents are very proud of their children usually. So I wish everybody a great year coming up.
So when is actually the best time to do that, you know, heavy-duty back-to-school shopping? Is there a best time or place? And what are some tips for the back-to-school shopping? I know it's changed over the years.
It has changed over the years. And many schools today, you know, in the report card in June or in the end of May, put in a little list of materials that they want the child to come into school with. So things like tissues and wipes and, you know, wet ones are now standard materials that they want kids to bring because, you know, with after COVID in particular, but before COVID as well, you know, children were taught to clean their own desks and to keep their area neat and clean. And if they had their own wipes, you know, with their names on it, they could go up and take a wipe and wipe their desk. And that was done when I was a teacher, you know, as well. But today, teachers, you know, are very proactive. And so they're very specific on the kinds of notebooks they want. If you're in elementary school, you have the black and white notebook usually. But as you get into junior high school, you might have a binder or you might have loose leaf, you know. And today you have a lot of computer generated things, so you need folders, you know, to put in the different subject areas, the different materials. And usually the school provides a list. Now, if they don't provide a list, my strong recommendation is that you don't buy a whole lot of things, because when your child goes to school that first day, you will be given a list of materials that the child will be required to bring, paper towels, and, you know, those things are pretty standardized. The paper towels, the wet ones, you know, the wipes, you know, are pretty standard. Some schools also request, you know, the liquid soap so that there's soap in the classroom, because unfortunately in a lot of schools, all of those materials are not provided to the classrooms. And so teachers, you know, for years have been providing all these basic supplies. They're not provided. Paper towels and things like that, you know, should be standard equipment in every school, but they're not. And, you know, when funding goes down, those are the first things that go. So they request that parents bring these things. Those are pretty standard. But in terms of pencils or pens, there are some teachers that do not want the children to have pens. They want them only to have pencils, and they want a specific number, pencil number 2. And so, you know, if you're a parent and you've bought all of these materials and the teacher says, well, we're not going to use those, then you have those in your house. And that seems to be wasteful. So if you haven't been given a list and there's no list online, you know, now you have, you know, online accessibility, I would wait and just bring a basic book and a pencil, you know, to school, and then have whatever the materials are, then you'll go out that afternoon and you'll get whatever you need. All of the materials are on sale through the end of September, mostly in places like Staples and, you know, Kmart and, you know, Walmart and all these other, you know, CVS and, you know, stores. So, you know, you're able to get, you know, what you want. Now, everybody needs a backpack, or, you know, they now have little suitcases, which I think is really overkill. But
remember when I was a kid, they called them book bags. Remember book bags?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, but now you put it on your back, and, you know,
yeah.
Depending upon the age of the student, you know, you don't need a gigantic backpack for a little kid, because they should not be carrying a lot of things. And I have been, you know, objecting to the amount of, you know, materials that students carry back and forth, books and so forth, for many, many, many years. I think it's very detrimental to their spine and their back. But older kids carry a lot of books in the back, so they need a larger book pack. And that you can buy ahead of time. That is, you know, but the actual, you know, paper and pencil things that will be used in the classroom, and the kind of folders, you know, some teachers want a folder with 2 pockets, and other teachers want a folder with 1 pocket, and some want a folder with no pockets because they're going to use them as a filing system in the back of the classroom. So, you know, I would wait for those kinds of materials until I received a list from my classroom teacher. And then that would, you know, save you some money and some aggravation as well. And, you know, in August, in July, all the school supplies were out. So, you know, kids had an opportunity to, you know, to go and look and see what kind of backpack they might want, or, you know, material that they want. And they should be able to choose, you know, something that's within reason. You don't need a designer backpack to go to school. You need a backpack that's going to hold books and hold materials, and that's going to be comfortable on your shoulders. I think, you know, common sense should pervade, you know, in these situations. And in regard to clothing, there are a lot of schools that have begun to have uniforms, which I think is a superb and wonderful idea. As much as kids like to be individualistic and you know, wear all different types of clothes, having a uniform sets a standard for a classroom and a school that everybody is treated exactly the same, that there's no kid with, you know, $400 sneakers walking around with a kid who has $60 sneakers, and then that kid is ridiculed because they don't have the $400 sneakers, and that happens. And that is something that, you know, principals are beginning to look at. If you have a uniform, everybody has the same. So they have the same type of shirt and the same type of pants or skirt, and, you know, it equalizes everybody. And I think it makes it more, you know, academic, that you're not worrying about clothing, but you're worrying about school, and everybody is paying attention more to the classroom because they're all in the same outfit. But that's a personal thought I have, and I know that, you know, there are many who disagree with me, including some of my grandchildren, but I have grandchildren who are in uniform, and their mothers applaud this 100% because in the morning, this is what you're wearing. You're not changing your clothes two or three times, or maybe I won't wear this shirt or I'll wear that shirt. This is what you're wearing because this is the school uniform, so it simplifies things in the morning a lot. So I wish, you know, that we had a better policy uniformly, you know, in many, many countries, uniforms are required in every single school. And I think it changes the attitude and the climate of the academics.
Very important, absolutely, as you're saying. It really is essential. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the possibly going to a new building, how parents can help a child adapt to a new building. Also, there, in addition to that, and that is a big change, you know, for a kid going to a new building, there's also making new friends, too. If it's their first time they're going to school and it's a whole new experience, or they're, you know, now going into the new grade and maybe some of their other friends have moved on, moved away, they're in different buildings now. Because I know in some cities and towns, you know, there's several different buildings in one town, and sometimes depending on where you live in the town, you may have all gone to the same elementary school, but now as junior high school is coming, you're going to a different building, so you might not see those friends that you were familiar with. Making new friends. How can parents not only help the child adapt to the new physical surroundings of the new building, but also now making new friends as well?
Well, I always told my children that, you know, if you wanted to make a friend, you needed to be the person to approach. So go up to somebody and say, gee, you know, I'm new in this school. Have you been, you know, in this school before? And make the effort to reach out to somebody in your classroom, you know, at lunch. Can I sit with you at lunch? Can I, learn, you know, if you have anything, you know, to tell me about the school, can you help me out? But be the person to approach rather than have others approach you, because it will then allow you right away, you know, to know whether or not the person that you're approaching is a nice person. You know, obviously if somebody approached me, I'd be very happy to sit with them and talk to them and, you know, try to befriend them, you know, and then if, you know, we were very different, you know, we may go our separate ways, but, you know, be the person to break the ice. And that's hard for a lot of kids, but it's something that they need in their lifetime to be able to do, because it helps you to expand your vision and your view, and you make friends that way. You make friends. If you're a friend and you become a friend, you know. So if a new kid comes into your, you know, classroom during the year and you've had this experience, you can be the one to approach them, and it's like a big, gigantic circle. The first days are very stressful for many, many kids when they go into a brand new school. I have a granddaughter who's in Texas, and she's starting in a brand new school. She's in high school, but they moved, so she's in a brand new school. And she's not particularly, you know, she's very friendly, but she's very shy as well. And so I told her, I said, you know, you're in high school now. Be the friend. Become the friend. Approach somebody. So she's, you know, promised to do that. I'm going to speak to her this week to find out how things went, because she's going into a brand new environment. She doesn't know anybody at all. And so, you know, I hope, you know, that works for her. And you know, she's a great kid, and, you know, but she's not gregarious. She's not the person that's always talking. She's the person that's listening most of the time, you know. So, you know, it's tough on kids, but, you know, you can, as a parent, when you drop your child off, if you're able to do that, usually the first day is parents like to see where their kids are going, and you know, so they, you can kind of size up, you know, you know, some kids, and if they get online, you can say, oh, you know, there was a little girl with a, you know, ponytail. Did you get a chance to speak to her? Or if there's a boy, there's a boy with, you know, a red shirt. I saw him today. You know, can you, you know, look at him? Or his backpack was, you know, very cool. Did you get a chance? And so reaching out and helping your child make the first attempt makes a big difference. Kids are pretty great. They don't normally isolate others. And there are several, you know, I'm not saying that every kid does not do this, but there are several who are more isolationist and more, you know, those are tend to be the bullies in the group, you know. The kids who, you know, want to be with their own clique and all of that, they tend to be the bullies. But the general population is usually friendly. And if you are out in the playground, a recess, and you're playing ball, you play ball with somebody that maybe you don't know, and then you strike up a friendship. So making the effort is important. And so I would recommend that, you know, parents, you know, advocate that and you know, being a friendly person yourself creates friends for you. And so that would be my recommendation, you know, and it might not happen that first day. It may happen the second day, but it will happen, you know, and they'll get to see each other again and again and again. So friendships will begin, you know, if it's not immediate, it will begin. And so take heart and don't get, you know, too disappointed or upset. And if there is a problem, address it immediately, you know, and address it immediately. Go to the teacher and say, listen, my child needs some help. You know, he's, you know, sitting by himself. You know, what can you do? And the teacher will help immediately, you know, to make sure that that child is included. But usually there's not a problem. Kids are very resilient, and they don't have the kind of biases and prejudices that many adults have. They don't see that. They don't see that. They are taught that by their parents. They get along with each other because they have a common interest. And that's just the truth. That's just the way it is. They see each other via common interests and common goals. And, you know, the kid who's good in math gravitates to the other kid who's good in math, you know. And they just kind of connect with each other. And it does not matter what they look like or where they're from or what their religion is. Kids do not care about that. At all, not at all. They're taught that by the adults that they are surrounded by. So, you know, usually kids, you know, get along very well with each other. That's been my experience as a teacher, and you know, I'm very watchful for the loner. I'm very, very watchful for the kid who's by themselves. I do everything I can, you know, in my past life as a teacher, to include that kid, and then that kid was included, you know, somebody, you know, became his friend, and then others became his friend, and so it worked out. It worked out.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic. You know, how can the family make special plans then for after school as well, especially that first day, Maureen?
Well, I think it should be a celebration. I think there, you know, if your child has a special desire for special food that you make that food that night to celebrate the beginning of a brand new year. Make it a celebration. Make the first day of school a celebration. I'm a very, very big believer in celebrating all the new things that happen in a child's life, even if they're little things. It doesn't matter. Celebrate this great new beginning of the school year and you know, with the anticipation that it's going to be the best year ever. Now, it may not be, but that's your anticipation, that this is going to be the best year ever, and you're going to do very well in school. And if you were having trouble, you know, in a subject, you know, last year, well, this year you're going to do better, and you're going to do very well in that subject. And so, you know, be very optimistic about, you know, the great things that are about to happen so that the child is looking forward to great things happening, you know. And we always celebrated. We had a cake, and I, you know, always, you know, had everybody put candles on the cake, and we celebrated, and everybody blew out the candles, and beginning of the school year, and everybody was as happy as could be. And, you know, by February, well, they were not always so happy, but it didn't matter. We were, you know, beginning the year on a new foot, and whatever happened the year before, whether, you know, it was terrible or not so good, that was going to be eliminated, and we were starting afresh, and we were starting with new teachers, and we were starting with new, you know, new expectations. And so that's what I would recommend, you know, to everybody, that they celebrate this beginning of a brand new chapter in the child's life. And every year that you are in school is a brand new chapter. And even starting work is a brand new chapter. So you start and you celebrate all these new chapters in your child's life, and then you have somebody who is an optimistic, happy person.
Absolutely right, and that's the bottom line, yes. Beautifully said. You know, helping families to set goals for the school year, for instance, like getting an A on the first test, those kinds of things, that's essential too, right?
Well, I think, you know, what I always want kids to know is that they should give 100%. And if their 100% is an 85, that's okay. It doesn't have to be 100 in order to be a success, because every child has a skill. And some kids are very, very good in math and not so good in English. And other kids are very, very good in English and not so good in math. So if you give 100% to every single subject you approach and you work as hard as you can, then your parents are happy and they're satisfied with you, and they should be satisfied that you've given 100%. Now, if you don't give 100%, well, that's a different story. You know, if you're just doing the minimum and you're not, you know, trying to get the best grade you can, well, that's another issue altogether. So you should always try to instill giving 100% to everything that you do. If you have a report, do the best report you can do. Read it over, change it, you know, edit it, do all the things you need to do to make it the very best report you can do. And even if you have to do it a couple of times, that's okay, because that's your best effort. And teaching best efforts is a very important skill for kids to have in their lifetime. They should always approach everything in life with the best effort. So this is what you're teaching when you say, do your very best, and I'll help you, I'll sit with you, I'll give you whatever, you know, success and you know, whatever you need, I will provide for you. I will provide, and I will be there, and I will help you in any way that I can. But give your best effort, and don't complain about the fact that it's hard, because it should be hard. School should not be easy, and it should not be something that, well, oh, I'm going to give an hour to my homework, and then I'm going to go out and play for 3 hours. That should not be the way it is. It should be I'm giving 3 hours to my homework and playing for an hour, which is, you know,
right,
not our society today. But that's, your best effort is always good enough for everybody.
Exactly right. Yes, exactly right. Because sometimes kids feel all that pressure to be perfect,
yes,
and to A, and that's not how life is, because the kids are still figuring out who they are and what their interests are and what things they're, you know, they're good at. Also,
and nobody is perfect.
Nobody's perfect. You established the scholarship program that honors your son, Christopher.
Yes.
We've got about a minute or so left here, but tell us how the program, you know, is helping students, and things like deadlines to apply and things of that nature. And are you still doing the dinner dance as part of the fundraising?
No, we're not. We gave that up about 6 years ago because it was taking over my life. It was really it was an all-year, you know, endeavor where I had to start, you know, when we gave the scholarships in June, we had to start in July, and it became overwhelming to continue to do it on that intensity level. And so we dropped back and we gave it, you know, to high school students only. We did elementary and junior high schools for about 3 years after that. And I went around, you know, to the schools that we were providing the scholarships to. But again, that became, you know, overwhelming. So now we're doing it strictly online and through word of mouth. And the deadline for the essay is September 19th, which is quickly approaching. We've had four people apply so far. We have enough scholarships this year for four. So I'm hoping, you know, that we get more, you know, so we'll be able to have a contest. I have five judges who have been with me for 21 years, and I have more than five, but we rotate the judges. I have 50 altogether, but we rotate them from 1 year to the next now.
How can they learn about it?
They go on, have them go on to my website, Maureen Santora at yahoo.com, and put in the heading, put in, you know, scholarship, and I will respond to them, and I look on it on a daily basis, and, you know, pick up, and I will respond and send them all the materials that they need to have. And they can, you know, we'll have a dialogue, and I'll be able to, if they want me to call them, I will call them, and they can leave their number with me at the website. Okay?
Great. That is perfect. Maureen, you're the best. We appreciate your being with us here. Always an enriching conversation on so many different levels, and I think this one was perfect, as, you know, we're in the middle of August at the time of this episode right now, so that back to school and those essentials, I think the preparatory that we just offered today together for the parents and for the kids was perfectly timed. So looking forward to chatting with you on the next episode in our exclusive series. You're always a ray of sunshine and wit and wisdom, Maureen, and we thank you for joining us on the show as always.
Thanks, Jim, very much. Have a wonderful week, and good luck to everybody who's starting school this coming week and the next week
That's
to follow.
Absolutely. Thank you, Maureen. You're the best. Maureen Santora has been doing this since 1967, folks. So she knows what she's talking about. She's an extraordinary education advocate and a retired educator herself. So she's seen it from every angle you could possibly see it from. She speaks from extraordinary experience and passion and enthusiasm for the teachers, the system, the parents, the kids, the whole kit and caboodle. We thank her for being with us. We thank you for being with us as well. Jim Masters here. Stay tuned. Another great episode of our series comes up here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a great day, and thanks for joining us. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.